Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Welcome, everybody, to your freshly delivered Owl Post. I am just one of your hosts, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is always, the wonderful, competent, caring, loving, joyful, joyous, Drea Kaufman.
I'm going to start counting these adjectives at some point and adding to them every time.
Well, wait. You're kind of like Dudley. You're like, last year there's only 36. Last year there were 37. Oh, man. That would be actually really funny. Oh, man.
At some point, I'll be like, Matthew, you gave me 6 last week and only
5.
Yeah,
you're
this
falling
week.
Down on the job there. Goodness.
You use that adjective already. You got to try
yes,
another one.
Yes, you're like writing them down, you know, making sure that I'm not repeating adjectives. So little do you know, I just have the thesaurus up on my computer. So. Oh, gosh.
Oh, that's funny.
But we are excited to be back here to talk about writing on the wall. And wow, things are really starting to hit the, well, I mean, not really fan, but the wall. So it's great to be here. And hey, you know, if you want to interact with us, we love interacting with you. And you can find us all over the place. We're on Twitter at Join Nerd Party. We're also at Facebook at facebook.com/nerdparty. You can find us online at thenerdparty.com. And maybe you would like to send us an email. So if you're over at thenerdparty.com, go to thenerdparty.com/contact. Choose Owl Post, and that will come straight to Drea and I. And yeah, check out Facebook because it is a great place to find us. And we post all the shows there. So if you want to interact with specifically about one of the episodes, that's a great way to do it. Just contact us under the episode. And Drea and I love talking to people there. So, well, this chapter, I mean, obviously we just kind of pick up right where we left off, which was in the hallway where there was blood on the walls.
Pick up right where it left off, that's for
yeah,
sure.
I mean, you know, not exactly where you wouldn't leave off, where there's blood on the walls and a dead cat, or seemingly dead cat, just hanging there.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
I could make a comment here about cats, but I'm not going to. So, we'll just pass that over.
My cats are awfully sensitive. I feel like they'd hear you, even from the other room.
Probably would.
Somehow try to attack you across country.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm this far away. But what I love here in this chapter is the way in which, again, Lockhart keeps trying to interject himself and talk about how great he is. And he really has no compulsion about doing that in front of, like, everyone, even Dumbledore.
He's got, like, zero. He's, like, one of those people who have, like, zero social awareness as to, like, when is this is and isn't appropriate. Like, read the room. It's really not the time. Well, it's funny for us as readers. You're like, oh, I'm glad for the, like, reprieve from the super heavy, intense moment. But if I was in the room as a student or teacher in that moment, I'd be like, come on, man, read the room.
Well, and I think you're absolutely right. And I think she does such a good job of writing this character because he's one of those people who's so self-absorbed that he kind of thinks that he's the center of the universe. Like, he can't see that he's not. And I think you said it in one of our other episodes, I thought it was so smart. He really is overcompensating so badly for wanting to be great because he knows he's not.
Yeah. In the next couple of chapters, we start to see that a little bit more, and we start to get the impression that he doesn't know how to communicate or relate without making it about him. Like, that's just the only way he knows how to contribute to the situation, even though it's wildly inappropriate. That's the only thing he knows to do. Like, that's all he can contribute.
And you know what's really interesting is the way in which he and Filch actually have a lot in common, because Filch is a squib, as we truly find out, you know, he even calls it out that he thinks, you know, Harry attacked his cat because he found out he was a squib. And Harry's like, what's a squib? I don't even know what that means, you know.
I love Harry at that part. He's like, I have no idea what you're talking
awesome.
About.
It was like absolutely awesome. Because, and two, like, everybody's like, oh yeah, like, why would he know what that is? But at the same time, there really is this connection between those two because, you know, the only thing we'll find out later that there's only certain types of magic that he's actually very good at. Lockhart.
He's like a dunce wizard.
Yeah. And
that's kind of what I think of.
Right. And so, you know, finding out that Filch mistreats students because he's basically angry at them for being the fact that he's not, you know, an actual wizard. It makes sense then why you have Lockhart, who's also doing this thing where he's trying to cover up for the fact that he's not really all that great magically. And I just thought that was really cool thing for me to, and I mean, I could just be dumb, but I put that together reading that this time. And I was like, oh yeah, it's a really interesting mirroring she's doing.
So when I read Filch, particularly in the chapters like this one where we get a little bit more insight into him, I get the feeling that he's like the janitor at school that has been bullied and harassed and made fun of by students because they're kids and they don't understand what they're doing. And he just becomes so like disillusioned to it. And that he just assumes everyone's judging him all the time. So he's going to be a cranky old jerk about it because, you know, like they must all know he's a squib and they must all think he's dumb and pointless. And so what good has he got? At least if he scares them, they leave him alone. You know, like I got that like really kind of sad, sorrowful, like old bitter man sitting on his stoop yelling at kids in the hallway. Feeling from him, particularly in this book, because you get a lot more of his kind of like honest character coming out when he's, you know, sobbing about right. Mrs. Norris, and he's, you know, yelling that they know, and he's like completely heartbroken about it. So
he definitely comes off as the get off my lawn, you know, old guy.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's an act that he puts on. And it's so interesting because, and I'm sure part of it has to do with the way he's treated and been treated because he is a squib. But, you know, it almost seems like, you know, Hagrid treats the students with care and love. And Hagrid, to the students, at least as far as they know, is not allowed to do your magic. You know, if Filch maybe had more of a Hagrid attitude, maybe people would like him more. And it's just so interesting the different ways that they've been treated. And that's another mirror that we'll get in this story, because Hagrid is very much like Filch in a lot of ways because he isn't allowed to do magic anymore. We'll find out why. And you get this whole thing of these two characters, but the way that they then go about the rest of their lives is very different, even though they've been mistreated for most of their lives because of who they are.
It's kind of like the parallels between Harry and Voldemort, in that they both had similar things happen to them in their lives, and they both made a very distinct, unique decision on how to handle that and how to let that affect them. And they became two very different people who still had a lot in common. But you've got Harry, who decides that love is more powerful, and Voldemort, who decides that power is like the ultimate thing he needs. So you almost have kind of a similar dichotomy in that, you know, Filch and Hagrid have similar ideas that they're not supposed to or can't use magic. And, you know, Hagrid, his upbringing and what genetically he is that we learn later on in the series, being a factor that I'm sure he got made fun of about when he was a kid too, you know, lots of things that they both have reasons to be sort of disillusioned by the world. And Hagrid's decided that he's just going to let it go and trust the good in people and the good in the world. And Filch has decided he's going to hold it against everybody and scream like an old man on the stoop. So you feel bad for Filch, but he made that decision. And while he didn't go super evil villain on us, he went super cranky old man on us instead.
Yeah, I think that's a really phenomenal thing to put together, and the ways in which she is continually kind of showing you different versions of these mirrors and the choices that we make. And what I think is really interesting is just how the whole book really becomes about choice, like who we choose to be. And I think that's really kind of a cool thing. And, you know, one of the funniest things here is, you know, Dumbledore is kind of poking and prodding, you know, Mrs. Norris to figure out what's wrong with him, which I find hilarious.
Just picturing him with a pencil, poking with the eraser the whole
time. It's just really funny. And of course, everybody, well, at least Filch, is pointing his finger that it's Harry. And I love that Snape just kind of comes to his defense, sort of. Like, well, maybe they were just in the wrong place at the wrong time. But why weren't you at that Halloween feast? And, like, Harry doesn't want to tell them that he's been hearing voices. So they're all like...
He was chasing a voice.
We were just tired after the... You know.
I love how terrible liars they are.
Like, you could just see their faces and how bad the lies are. And then what was really fascinating is the way in which the politics of school between the teachers comes up between McGonagall and Severus. And I love that. And I really get the feeling here. It's like, you know, Severus is really slimy, but McGonagall is the bad A, B that you just don't go up against, you know, when it comes to Quidditch specifically in her house. And I just love them, those two going at each other. Like, I really wish that this has been in the movie, because, wow, would have been a great scene to see Alan Rickman and
Maggie Smith,
yes, play. So, because, oh gosh, this is just great stuff. Great stuff.
But I love how, I don't know, I just love how she... I have to imagine that she goes back to her little, like, corridor study or whatever the teachers live in every night, and pours herself a little brandy and, you know, swishes it around in her cup and kicks back by the fireplace and is just like, oh, Potter, like, every time. Yeah. And like, she like, knows she's doing the right thing, but she's like, man, this is hard. Like, I just imagine her having her little teacher moment. Like, I'll be strong and be like, but I kind of just want to... Can you for once make my life easy?
Yes, yes. Well, and I mean, Dumbledore has the same reaction almost, except he legitimately is just kind of staring Harry down because he realizes that something's off here. And I think that that's really fascinating. And then, you know, as the kids are walking away, like, as fast as they can, Harry's like, do you think I should have told them about the fact that I'm hearing voices? And they're like, Ron's like, no, even in the wizarding world, hearing voices is, it's not a good thing.
Yeah, I like, and that's a direct quote from the movie. And I like that they kept that one. It's pretty impactful. And it pretty much sums it up, like, no, hearing voices still means you're probably crazy, whether you're a wizard or not.
Well, and then I love Harry finally gets out. What is a squib? Like, he finally gets his answer. And I really thought that was... Harry, again, he's so inquisitive. Like, he does want to know things about the world that he's in. And I love that he didn't let that go. Like, he's like, I need to know what this is. So I thought that was really cute. And it's just such a part of his character.
Yeah. Reading this part of the chapter in particular with Dumbledore, knowing that Harry's lying, but still sort of being like innocent until proven guilty and letting him go. It reminds me that he knows more about what's going on than he lets on. And he knows more about what's going on than he cares to share with anybody because it's kept so tightly under wraps. It reminds me that while he doesn't believe Harry, he can't truly defend Harry without having that suspicion of him knowing more than what, you know what I mean, coming out. particularly, it really dawned on me in the end of the next chapter. But here I was kind of like, that's right. He always seems to know more than you think he does. So
yes, yeah.
It's not just blind trust in Harry, which is what it kind of looks mm-hmm. like, or favoritism. He genuinely knows that it can't be Harry.
Right.
So he has to kind of let him go because he can't punish him because he's a good person. But he also can't like exonerate him because then he has to share what he knows. So I just thought that he gets himself in these predicaments occasionally. And I think Dumbledore is like the world's worst communicator. He needs to take lessons on effective communication.
Well, and it's so interesting because it really does get into something deep that you won't really know until the end of the series.
Yeah.
Exactly how much Dumbledore understood and knew and all of that kind of stuff. And there is only one other person in that scene who knows what Dumbledore knows.
A little bit more than, yeah.
And
we don't even know how much of that changes.
Right,
though.
Exactly. You're right. And so...
spoiler,
and I'm not going to give it away. We're not giving it away. We're not giving it away who that is in that scene. But there is somebody in that scene who does know a lot more. And it's just so interesting to watch that.
Yeah. It's one of those things where like rereading the book is where that actually comes into benefit because you read that and you can read into it a little bit more because you know what happens next because you've read it. So... knowing that and kind of having that information while you're reading this new conversation gives it different context.
Well, and this is also a part where we just get another little hint about Ginny and the fact that she is really taking this hard, the fact that Mrs. Norris has been attacked. And
but
I think
Matt, she's a cat person. She's a cat person. It's just because she's a cat person.
Yeah. It's just because he's a cat. Just a cat person. But I love, and I wish that they had put this in the movie instead of the way they did it, because I love that they kind of like Hermione goading Professor Binns into telling them about the, Chamber of Secrets. And it's the exact same pretty much from the movie.
Very similar, but with the ghost professor instead of McGonagall.
Yes, yes.
Which makes more sense, too. Mm-hmm. The history professor versus the transfiguration professor.
Right. And, you know, it really does. I think that this was interesting because this is kind of the first time that you get that background about how the school was created and what the people were like behind it. And you get the sense that Slytherin himself and the kids start talking about this afterwards, that he was kind of the one who... really put forward that idea of purity and wizard blood. And again, he's kind of like the Hitler of the wizarding world at that point. And I think that I love the way that she kind of does that. She lays that groundwork, but it's also something that, as we've talked about in the different areas of the wizarding world, it's not just that prejudice, but there have been other prejudices that have crept in that are actually accepted. And so she's doing a great job of kind of layering all these things together and showing how, yes, society can have gotten better in some areas, but then there are other areas where we just turn a blind eye.
Yeah, and it goes back to play into the sort of cultural unacceptance that these people are facing, you know, that this culture is facing regularly, that she just plays with the entire time, is, you know, where do these racism and these cultural bias and things like that come from? And she's literally telling you where one of the original ones came from, and where sort of that idea of pure bloods being the rightful heirs to the wizarding world comes from, and that becomes an incredibly important theme as we continue on.
Well, and then I just absolutely love that the kids turn into Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew.
So before we do that, though, I loved and I really missed out from the movie all the additional students asking all the questions. Like, actually really smart, too. Mm-hmm. Like, how is it that you would think anyone besides an heir of Slytherin could find it? Like, they wouldn't have a key or any way to find it. Like, I just thought it was so interesting. They had thoughtful, smart reasons why it could really be a thing. So I thought that was just so great. And it would have been easy to include in the movie. So it's disappointing that they left it out. But the students seem to just sort of accept McGonagall's explanation and move on in the movie. Maybe it's just because it's a ghost and they're prejudiced against ghosts, but I mean, I don't know. You never know.
No, I think you're absolutely right. It really is a cool thing to show that these kids, and I would say this, what's great is that these kids are critical thinkers. Mm-hmm. And I honestly don't think that kids these days, and it's sad to say, would be able to think this critically. Maybe that's being mean, but these kids really are on the nose, like you said. Like they've got it. They are poking holes in his arguments that take some real critical thinking skills. But what about the, you know? And I yeah, that's a really really good point.
And they really like it. It goes on when we go later on, not to spoil really anything, but when we get towards, you know, like Dumbledore's army and stuff, it's show like it doesn't come out of nowhere. These students have been thinking for mm-hmm. themselves since the first day they came to class. You know, Harry and Hermione and Ron just eventually inspire them to act on those thoughts versus suppress them and just sort of follow the lemming pack, if you will. So it's interesting that it started here, and I wish we'd gotten more of that in the movies. I wish they'd kept some of those long-term things and those long-term payoffs in there. But it was really interesting to see it start now, like that they're thinking for themselves and asking these questions and not just accepting things at face value. I think that's just so important. And such a little thing she did very quickly. So,
well, yeah, no, I think you're right on. And it's something that, like you said, at the forefront of it are Ron, Harry, and Hermione. And it is sad that this is not part of the movie as well. And it's one of the things that makes the book so enjoyable is again, when they turn into the Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew adventure, and they're going to do some sleuthing, and they're checking over the scene. And I love Harry pointing out, have you guys ever seen spiders act like this? Because this is weird. yeah, and then Ron telling his story about and Hermione trying not to laugh is just, that is really funny.
Well, and I love her reaction to him when he's just like, I don't like spiders. And she's like, really? Like, how did we not know this? We work with them all the time. And he's like, Dad, they're different.
Yeah. Like, well, and I mean, who wouldn't be traumatized as if a child, you know, your teddy bear was turned into a spider by one of your brothers? So,
right. That is pretty traumatizing.
Yeah. I mean, when your teddy bear sprouts legs and pinchers, that's freaky. And then what's really funny is the fact that they sneak into the girls' bathroom that Moaning Myrtle is always kind of around, that nobody really uses anymore. And we get a little bit more in depth as they kind of talk through their ideas of like maybe what could have happened. And again, she just is really doing such a good job of setting the stage. And what I like about it is it just deepens everything in the story. And I think she's really good about not really rushing. Like we're not just flipping to the next chapter. I'm really glad reading this book. I'm just really enjoying what she's doing.
I wish that some of the bathroom, I mean, they use the second floor girls' bathroom in the movie and the Moaning Myrtle and all that, but we don't get a lot of it in the movie. They cut a lot of it out. And I really enjoyed that it was like out of order, and that's why there's nobody in there, and just the overdramatic nature of Moaning Myrtle. She's so just mopey and emo the entire time. I think it was really great. And I like that it's almost like a shambled bathroom. Like, not only is it out of order, but no one would want to use it anyway. I really love that she creates that and we get to be introduced to it. And I think in particular, I love that when they walk out, they get in trouble from Percy, because we just don't get enough Percy in the movie. I mean, it's kind of a tool, but we don't get enough of him in the movie. But I love they walk out and he instantly like gets mad, and like any good redhead, his neck turns red when he gets angry. And I just, it's just a little touch. That's just, I mean, we have redheads in our family. So like watching them get angry and that red flush up the neck, I'm like, I know that very well. My dad had that a lot growing up. So it was like the nice little personal touch where you're like, that's real. Like that's a real thing that happens. And I really like that she takes the time to add that.
Well, and not only that, but he also is kind of getting all over them about the fact that, you know, you have Ginny so worried, she's crying her eyes out, that you're going to get expelled for all of this. And Ron's like, and this is the thing about, I love that adding all this stuff because it just adds so much to the, especially the Weasley family here. You know, Ron's like, you don't give a crap about Ginny. You're just worried you're not going to be head boy. And like, you know, it's such a great dynamic because it's so true to life, to how, you know, the youngest boy in the family and the oldest boy in the family would interact a lot of times. And it's really great. And then, of course, I think I love the way that the chapter kind of wraps up where Hermione's like, I think I've figured out a way to figure out what we want to know, but we're going to have to break about 50 school rules to do it.
Yeah. She makes me laugh. And the fact that, you know, at first they're kind of debating her a little bit about it. And then Ron's like, hey, you know what? I never thought I'd see this day. Let's do it. Like,
yes.
The fact that she was so willing to break the school rules to make this happen. Like, that was the deciding factor for him. Okay, fine. Just no toenails, but we'll do this.
Yes, it's so brilliant. And what's great about it is the way in which Rowling has done such a good job of progressing Hermione and her relationship with the boys. And you can see that they're all rubbing off on each other, you know, the ways that they interact. And I think it's phenomenal. And I love it. It makes me continue to love the characters more and more. And so this is a really, I really like this chapter, and it's not because there's so much that happens in it. It's because of all of the little details that we get about the story and the school and the professors and the kids. It's really good stuff.
It's really good, like day-to-day stuff without being dull or boring. You know, she doesn't waste her time explaining that they turn the corner and walk down the corridor unless it's important, you know. So it is really great stuff, and I particularly love that she leaves off on sort of another little cliffhanger about, you know, they need someone to sign to help get this book out of the, you know, restricted section, and they're like, well, we're gonna need someone real dumb to do that for us. I just love, I mean, we all already know who they're talking about, but I just find it that's a great way for her to leave it off.
Yeah, it is really good. Oh, man. Well, I'm excited to keep diving into these chapters. This book, you know, the plot is definitely thickening, and it's just, it's getting so good. And I can't wait to continue. So, Drea, I think we do have a few things we wanted to talk about before we tell everybody where they can find us. And I think maybe that had to do with iTunes.
Yeah. So we have a couple new, as much as we like to dive into these things, we have a couple new reviews that say people like to dive into it with us. So Yankees Girl C21 says that although I've read these books at least 10 times each, I haven't reread them in a while. This podcast gives me a great excuse to do so, and it's an interesting and insightful companion to the books. So thank you so much. That's great to hear. And we're glad you're rereading them for the 11th time. So, and our other is from Dr. NASA NC, and it's a podcast even muggles can love. Great podcast, a unique way to approach a critical analysis of Harry Potter and the Wizarding World of J.K. Rowling. Matt and Andrea bring fun, insight, and an encyclopedic knowledge of all things Potterish to make this podcast well worth the time of an old and new fans alike. If books had an audio commentary, this would be it. Second only to a podcast by Rowling herself, do yourself a favor and binge on this as soon as you can. So that one gave me all the feels. Thank you over and over again. That's awesome, and we're so glad that you like it.
Wow. Wow. That one, thank you, because Rowling herself, whoo, be still my heart. Thank
gave
you.
Gave him the goosebumps. Gave
yeah,
him the,
get, getting.
Gave
yeah,
him the
definitely.
Dragon bumps.
Yep, getting the feels. Well, thank you guys so much. We really appreciate that. It means a lot to us that you would spend a little time and give us those reviews, and it definitely helps the show grow. So head on over to iTunes and give us a star rating and review. And of course, you can find us wherever you get your podcasts. I mean, any podcast catcher. So make sure you check it out. Drea, if anybody wants to catch up with you about some Harry Potter or anything else, where can they find you online?
Sure, you can find me on Twitter at PCFChick, or you can come over to Instagram. I'm at Drea Kaufman, and it's Kaufman.
And you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. I'm on Instagram at MRushing. I'm on the Trek FM network doing a couple of shows. I do The Orb with Chris Jones talking about Deep Space Nine, and I also do 602 Club, which is our general geek show. It's so much fun. I hope you'll check it out. I'm on the Nerd Party Network here doing one more show with John Mills, Aggressive Negotiations, all about Star Wars, so don't miss that. And please check out my new show, Cinema Stories, and that's all about film through the lens of faith. And I actually got my co-host into reading Harry Potter. She's already almost done with the third book now.
Nice.
And she just started like 2 weeks ago. So yeah, it's awesome. And she's been listening to this show. But yes, check out Cinema Stories. I think you'll love it. And again, you can find those wherever you get your podcasts. Well, thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.